Hello, my name is Hendrik Thoma. I'm from Hamburg, Germany. I'm the owner of Wein am Limit. And in my previous life, I was a sommelier. Now I import wines from around 50 small little labels from all over the world. And yeah, a lot of fun.
So I think this job, first of all, is giving people a great experience. And you can learn and add knowledge to the time you work really in that job. Because I see many people who don't really work in that job. They are maybe great tech. Well, they know a lot about wine, but they don't know a lot of people. Don't know a lot about people.
Don't know a lot about people.
Thank you. I still have a hangover from last night. Sorry.
Not a problem.
Okay.
So then it's you need the two things in combination to work.
I think. Yeah.
And I mean, how do you see it here in Germany in terms of the wine scene? Younger sommeliers, do you see that there are a lot of people interested in working in wine? Have you observed anything different from when you were on the floor to now?
I think a lot of people are interested into wine. They want to go into that direction. But I think a lot of people don't have the balls to really to execute and to go through and to become professional. And that means that's not always very, convenient. To become a professional, because that means like you need to carve your niche and it's effort. And a lot of people think they can go the easy way. I mean, that's first of all, that's the bottom line. Because when I wanted to become a sommelier, nobody wanted to give me a chance. So I recarved my niche. I think now a lot of people are looking for sommeliers, and then we have people, talking and doing not the job. Right. And the job is make people happy. That means the floor.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't do it from home.
No. Yeah.
It's a profession. Yeah. It's a profession which is really about people, first of all. Full stop. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And something else that's been an interesting topic for me anyway in the last few months is, what is a sommelier worth in terms of, I think there's a huge disparity between what certain sommeliers get paid to others. About the service industry in general, even being a waiter, restaurant manager, it's a lot of time, isn't it? Like, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, and we were talking about like the amount of investment you have to have in yourself, also, not just in the job itself, but outside of the job, studying and constantly keeping yourself up to date.
You need to be really hooked by that virus, yes. And don't need to think about what you always make from it.
Yeah.
I think when you think about, what can I make from certain things, then you are missing the creative part of that job. And I think it's, first of all, it's passion. And that creativity will basically, and that kind of extra effort, when you train and taste and travel and pay here, pay there, you think always, what do I get for it? I mean, you find out later, much later in your career. So I think a lot of sommeliers are maybe not paid correctly in this country. Maybe they should get more. On the other hand, we have really difficult laws in terms for the employer. I can see that because I have a small company as well.
Mm.
So I think, let's say, United States, much easier, as they're participating in the sales.
Mm.
And then they get their share there. And if they're really good at what they do, they get, of course, a good wage. So I think sommeliers in the United States make much more money than here. But when I looked at when I became an MS, I didn't look at how much I could make from it. I would like to see how much can I learn from it.
Yeah.
And then later on, I was lucky enough, circumstance, life helped me to make a decent living from that.
Yeah. Mm.
So
that's interesting, isn't it? And it's not necessarily, I don't think everybody is always thinking about that, but I find sometimes, because it is so punishing in some ways, like the hours, how much of your life have you given?
But I do think that also translates to other jobs too, especially in creative jobs. Like you were saying, actually, that's the really interesting thing about money is not a good incentive when it comes to creative jobs.
Mm.
It has to be, the end result has to be the goal rather than money. Because the minute money becomes the end goal, you're incapable of doing your job because you're too focused. You can make someone do mechanical work with the dangling of the carrot, but you have to love it if it's going to be creative, otherwise you're completely blocked. And I see the same in my career. The more popular, the better I am, the more work I have to put in to get there and sustain that.
Mm.
But it means that in the end, my hourly what I get paid hourly does go down because you're having to put all this extra work in.
And it really comes from the network too. Once you have a network, that will pay back at one point. That's what I can see now. I mean, I'm now 25 years in this business, and I still know a lot of people, and that helps a little bit, just to get in, to, you know. So when I'm polishing, polishing. In Germany, there's an expression when you are basically a salesman, you need to polish the.
I wish we could all see
the door
handles. Right,
the door handles. That's what we do. Jesus Christ. Wow.
We haven't even.
Can we cut it out, please?
Which actually, we
My
probably
goodness.
Should put that into some wine right now.
Yes. Which one? Which one you want? We have wine on the table. We're not drinking it.
I know.
I think we should start.
Shame on us.
Should we start with the rosé?
We could. It's quite strong in that taste. So I'd rather go.
Wines. This or the Costes.
Three great wines here. I mean, we have a Abatucci, which you brought along.
Yeah.
Oh. That's from Kors.
Yes.
So with some really crazy varieties. You need to look them up on Wikipedia. Actually, I've never been to that winery, and I've tasted some wines. That's really nice. Then we have a wine from which I import. Yes, Cospes from Albarino. That's Vinos Atlanticos from Rodri Mendes. And we have another Atlantic wine, but much further south, from the Canary Islands. It's a rosé, and I think we should do that rosé from Matias y Torres. But we can do it now. Why not? Well, see what comes out. So La Palma. Beautiful capsule, I think.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit warm. Could be a little chill, but I noticed with her wines, they can use, or they can stand up to temperature quite good. Yes, quite stable. This has only 13%. You've been to La Palma?
No.
No. Well, you should take a trip. It's really nice. A lot of people go for the party islands on the Canary Islands. You know, Fuerteventura. La Palma is much more for elderly people, like
Perfect.
Me.
More my channel.
This is the most western of those islands. And which is interesting, like, because the climate on those islands, though they are, I think, in total surface, like 300 kilometers from each other, this one is the most western end. You have a climate which is more humid, a more climate like South America.
Okay.
And the soils are volcanic. They have two different soil types. One is the younger ones, which because they had a volcano explosion in the 70s. And the northern part is much older soils, and you have a more red clay. And Matias y Torres, what I like about this like, I try to take trips. My wife, she likes Lanzarote, and we have a week in springtime, and we have a favorite restaurant. And they had this wine a couple of years ago, and they served it to us. And we said, like, this is much different than all the other beautiful vacation wines. Mm-hmm. What is it? And then we looked it up. Matias y Torres, the guy got it at some wine shop. And then 2 years later, we would find out that she would only sell about 120 bottles on the Canary Islands, and the rest would ship to London, New York, Stockholm, Berlin.
Yeah.
Wherever, as people don't appreciate it, because a lot of people think these wines are
weird.
Kind of weird, or that vacation wines are normally comfort zone wines. So in this winery, what I like, they work with ungrafted Prephylloxera rootstock. So
which is quite common in the Canaries, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is, but it's quite rare in the world of wine. And she works with her family since 1885 on that winery.
Oh, wow.
That means like fifth generation, they produce only between 15,000 to 20,000 bottles, depending on the year. And I think she didn't want to become the winemaker. Her father died. He was a very humble man and a known winemaker. And she had to take the position as her brother had other things in mind and someone he wanted to keep it. They wanted to keep it in the family. And I think Victoria has done such a great job. So this is a rosé for not rosé drinkers. Would you agree, Emily?
I would agree. I actually find it more for, if you like, Jura Reds, you'd maybe be more inclined,
because the spiciness,
the fruit, and also the savouriness of the wine as well.
Mm. This is really, I love this. I love her wines. She's
so
skillful.
This is called 838740.
Exactly.
Claret.
What I don't know what the numbers are for. The claret, of course, means to the Bordeaux style of a heavier rosé. And this wine is produced from three varieties. And I think the formula she uses, that's quite unique. I mean, I wish in Germany sometimes we would have more young people trying to play and, you know, work around a little bit with what's possible. So she takes the Negramol, the red variety, she soaks it for 4 days and to get a little bit of color, extract color. Then she blends that must with Listan de Canarias, which is Palomino, mm-hmm. So which is quite neutral.
But she's using Listan Blanco.
Listan Blanco.
Because it's red.
And then, exactly, that's Listan Prieto. Yep. Well, anyway, difficult Spanish thing. But so if she blends the white and the red must, and then let it start co-ferment together. Mm-hmm. And she says it's like a tradition they have had on the island. And then, in the end, she would add about 10% of Albillo Criollo, which she fermented extra, and on the skins.
Okay.
And that's, I think that's where the tartness comes from in this wine.
Interesting, yeah.
And I like the formula. I mean, think of like, yeah. Hey, that's like chemistry or alchemistry or something next. But what comes out is nice. But you're right. I mean, Jura would be, a lot of people don't know how Jura tastes. So, but I think it has this, don't want to use it again, but umami kind of.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
It can, I think, match with many good food. Interesting foods too. Mm. And what I like about this, it's good acidity, so it's not cloying, it's really dry. It's not like these one of these
these
Wenka rosés. Oh, excuse my French. sorry. No, these Vapla rosés.
French is slipping out.
Yeah.
So, but it has this this really consequent and this is not an ego wine, I think. It's made with all the possibilities. But it's meant to be with food, and it really shows and displays where it's from. And I think this is what wine should be.
Yeah,
wine should be something, if I drink alcohol, then I want to be inspired. And I think many people just drink wine because they think, oh, it's a mellow, oh, it's nice, oh, it's expensive, or whatsoever, oh, nice label. But I think in the end, you drink the liquid, and you want to get some inspiration. And I get inspiration from this. Don't know how she does it, but I think it's just because she stays genuine, and she stays humble.
Yeah,
and then she's
this,
not aiming
this field
for
blend. Like what's really well, I know it's not a field blend, but this sort of blend of varietals and styles. Mm. It's
a
quite
co-ferment.
Common. Co-ferment, yeah, yeah. But you see this quite a bit in Australia actually with some of the more low intervention winemakers. It's quite common to have these sort of pink coloured wines.
I think it's
that are somewhere
it's smart,
between
yeah?
a white, red, and an orange because yeah. they're just saying, oh, I've had a bit of this, and I think that works really well with their like. But very typically, like Pinot Gris on skins is quite common to see that in it looks
really?
Like Pinot Noir, yeah,
okay.
because obviously the extraction from the, the skins of the top
is pink hue to them.
But they're really interesting wines to give to people because you taste them and you're
People
it's
want
this.
To put things
yeah,
in a box.
Yeah, what is this?
Well, it's but I think in the new world, in Europe, a lot of people have not understood that the new world has much more to offer. I mean, especially in Germany, it's really poor. If I look at what is offered from the new world, and then I go to places like London, even Stockholm, maybe too, but Copenhagen, and you see much more of a variety. And I think this is what Germany also should be. We should also import the good stuff. And the interesting stuff, because that's also gives us inspiration. So, but
I mean, you're working with quite a few producers from South Africa. Well, you have a couple from South Africa.
Four of them, yeah. yes. It's enough. Four of those blokes.
And a few from
But I think we talked about this with Holger when we went to Vinicultura. Was this idea that when places have a long wine history, that when people have a long wine history, they tend to go for wines from their own country.
Yeah, I mean, probably the same in France, the same in Spain.
Exactly.
But hey, you go to Spain, you go to Barcelona, or you can see some really exciting wine lists, I think. Yeah, of course, sure, there's kind of a protectional thing. And
that's why Scandinavians are a little more open-minded, because they don't produce
Canadians,
their own.
Canadians,
yeah, totally,
too.
Awesome.
Oh. Canada has made a great way in terms of wine, I think.
Except a lot of it doesn't come out of Canada, because the... It's too small.
Yeah,
we
import one wine from Canada, and
Per
Morissette.
Yeah.
I'm so happy with that. I mean, it's a wine you can really surprise people.
Yeah, that Cabernet Franc is very good.
Yeah, I think it's special. So now we have a wine. Emily, I'm looking.
So thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay, how are these varieties first? can you just look them up in the internet?
So the wine that we have, we have from Abatucci the Faustine Red, but the old vine, so the Vieux Vin 2015.
Mm.
So Corsica, the island of France, and it's quite interesting because obviously it falls under France, doesn't it? But I always find the wines from Corsica to be more similar to Italian wines.
Yeah.
Actually, I find this more like an Italian red and a French red because it has this bittersweet. The tannin acid structure is slightly different for me personally. So the grape varieties are almost impossible to remember or pronounce.
Should we try again? I was just saying, I feel like it's either a line from Queen's Scaramouche.
Nieluccio and Schiacciarello. I mean, the best thing is always when you do wine description, you say, well, some indigenous varieties.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So people can look it up by themselves. Yeah.
Google it yourself.
Thumb breakers.
Local
grapes is good too. I've had some of his rosés. I like it.
I think
he works in the biodynamics. He's by Demeter, yes?
Yes. And granite soils.
I think this is well chosen in terms of the wine we've had before. I think I can see a similar outcome. This more elegant, more fine, more subdued, not the dark berry fruit, it's the light red fruit, it's the spiciness. I mean, it's quite hot today.
Yeah, so it's nice. It's got this,
it warms up quick. So I'd like to drink it a little chilled, more chilled than this one even.
I pulled that out of the fridge. It was 16 degrees in the fridge. But obviously it's been on the table for a while, so chatting.
This will be nice with some goat, I think, or lamb, strong flavors. What I like about these wines, and I think Europe at the moment is a great place. 20 years ago, when I was a sommelier, that wasn't on the list for no one. We were still thinking of Burgundy, Bordeaux, a little bit of New World, but not too much. And then, and then Germany, of course. And now we have this fantastic variety, this regional wines. And in those days, they were, let's say, now we have these autochthone varieties. Now we have this Demeter wines and things like this. It was still kind of under suspicion.
Yeah.
If that's going to be ever great.
Yeah.
And now, 20 years later, this, I think, is great. The results are obviously much better than what we have in international wines. Because we have too many international wines, which are basically all taste in the same direction because they're made basically from the same mindset. And I think the greatest thing you have in wine is the place where you can grow and where you can create something unique and not only a formula.
The formulaic thing I think is really interesting because you also see it, chatting with chefs about this, also this idea of formula, that instead of when you're cooking a dish thinking of adding, it needs this much sugar, that much salt, it should be like, what is a salty ingredient that I can add instead of actually salt? What's sweet that we can add? Things get more interesting that way when you don't work with a cookie cutter formula of X, Y, Z, this works.
I think with any kind of thing, like also the human aspect should not be forgotten. That means like you need to have experience, and this is like something great value to a wine. It's not like something you've learned from school. This is like something you've learned in your family, and I think they have understood this, that was a great value, but it took a little bit to see, wow, we can maybe play on a different level. And I think now they do this. I mean, many of the wines at the beginning were quite bizarre, faulty, or stinky, or whatsoever. And I have to say, this wine is so fantastic. It's really pure. It's clean. Not clean in that kind of thing, like it's cleanly made,
it's
but
sterile,
there's nothing wrong with this wine. There's
really
no mistakes, exactly. Mm. Yeah, no stare, exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think, younger people will be attracted by this wine?
Look, I don't like.
I'm the oldest here at the table. I can ask you.
Yeah, so
I think so.
So, I mean, this is on the list at the Mickelberger, and we don't sell large volumes of it at all because it still is a hand sell. Also, it's not. These particular wines don't come in super cheap.
No, this has a price. Yes, of course. Yes, not. What's the price on the list?
The list price is around 65.
Yeah, but
it's not crazy in the world.
It's
of,
a nice
in the world of wine, but
let's say for the average person, thinks 65 is a lot of money.
Yeah,
I have to say, a lot of people have to work very hard for their money. 65 will be, but when I look sometimes wines which are consumed for 200 or 300, they're not as inspiring as this one.
Yeah.
So this, I think, in the end, is the much better deal. But those people who make a lot, of course, they are much more attracted by the big names, and they don't want to make mistakes, or they want to impress the ladies, or the ladies want to impress the guys, and see, my dear, I have brought this wonderful Aia wine from Italy, and oh dear, I'm worth now for that date 300, okay, let's do it. Well, you know, this is how it works in many ways, and this is different.
Yeah.
He really needs to love wine.
But I think that's the thing that's interesting about sort of the push also with natural wines, is you end up with less of this brand name idea, and people are a bit more curious about finding something special. Instead of having I have a Louis Vuitton handbag, I have a brand name wine.
Or I go to a designer who makes something special.
They would rather
something.
Be like, look at this cool designer I have from, look at this cool wine I know about. I mean, that's the nice thing about the shift towards...
Is it in the tattoo scene? It must be the same. There must be some big names and, oh, let me do
a tattoo. And they're not always great, but they
have a name. I've got it from that guy.
Exactly. It's the same idea. It's a luxury product with a brand.
I got this tattoo on my cheeks in London from...
Oh my gosh.
That was really ugly. And then this guy, you know what was so funny? He had a tattoo, and I was asking, what is this? It was a French guy. And I asked, what is this? He had all these big black...
stripes.
Yeah. Like a zebra.
Yeah.
And I asked him, what is this? And he said, well, I have this on the girlfriend's names I've had.
Yeah.
And they basically got to erase them with the big stripe. So he had a full arm.
I mean, how many stripes does that take until you realize this maybe isn't a good idea?
Well, he had 8.
At least. That's romantic.
And then he had one. I never forget, he had one here on his neck, Jennifer. And I thought, like, wow, now he's getting, this is becoming serious.
Like straight for the neck.
If it doesn't work out.
Luckily, there's a lot of Jennifers in the world.
Can you imagine after that? You're like, God, I can't get this one removed. I can only date Jennifers from now on.
Yeah, must find another Jennifer. Yeah.
No, but I think in many ways, if you look at wine, if you look at food, if you look at artists, if you look at tattoos, books, there is a lot of similarities in how it's treated by us. And I think most of it has to do with respect or with a kind of awareness what you do. I mean, I got tattoos when I was younger. But I look at them now, I say, like, okay, that I feel comfortable with them. For many years, I didn't feel comfortable. When I had them, I was cool.
Yeah.
Then I didn't felt in decline.
Cool.
Now I'm cool with it. Now I'm with in my age group, I'm probably one of the few ones who's...
You're like, check this out.
Yes. I can compete with the hipster guys. But what I'm saying is, like, I look now at people when they do tattoos and they do it in a more... It's interesting. Like, it's almost like when I look at you, Gwen, also you use it as a piece. It's very natural. It belongs to you. Though it's quite...
I mean, I also have a struggle with this, you know, you go through a period of wanting to be different, and then you sometimes pendulums swing the other way, then you want to be a bit more accepted, and then you find the happy balance where you accept both parts of yourself. So I think, but respect, I think that's a really interesting, but that also goes back to the wine education idea, goes back to all of these things tie in, because it's this idea of knowing what came before you. You were saying about winemakers, that it's not just about knowing what you know now, it's taking the combined knowledge of your ancestors and bringing it to a moment. All of these things, tattooing, wine.
A lot of people go with their tattoos, it's very interesting, from very... horrible later on they realize.
I mean, come on, let's talk about we've talked about this in episode 1, the wines I drank from the beginning. You do the same, and you start with
something,
your training wheels, and then you
easy stuff,
you
normally
learn a bit. Yeah
though, I had good luck. I mean, in Germany there is this kind of very modest thing always, like people tell you, oh, you need to first start with the cheap stuff and with the easy stuff.
You don't deserve the expensive
stuff yet. And I can tell all the young people, inspiration comes from great things, and normally not from these wines.
Yeah.
From these wines, it comes beautiful, beautiful
hangovers.
But yes. Inspiration comes from really great stuff. And even though if you have no fucking clue about it, once you have a great wine, you might, there's a good chance you get hooked to it.
I mean, with anything, when you treat yourself, when you say, I deserve something nice, and even if that means saving up a little bit and waiting to have something lovely rather than having lots of terrible wine, you feel
exactly.
Really good.
Why go through all that? But I think that's maybe Calvinistic thing, like when they tell us if you go to paradise, to go to paradise, you have to eat through this big, big wall of pudding. Emily's a little bit quiet now. She's thinking.
I'm listening to the
Are you thinking of getting a tattoo? we can we'll maybe gummy yeah. and
yeah.
Okay, good.
But what we've got in front of us right now, I could definitely smash the whole
evening day.
I could smash this right now.
Wow.
Easy.
Be careful.
It smells
it's,
good.
It's quite strong. It
smells delicious.
It's a wine. Cospes is a wine from Rodri Mendes. And he's quite famous now in Spain. I mean, in Germany, I don't think so. But in the scene of wine, I think a lot of people know him. And he's, I think, in the regard, he's a kind of a visionary, too. He's in Cambados, which is a place in the area of Rías Baixas. So Val de Salnés, that's basically on the western coast of Europe, basically north of Portugal. Rías Baixas is Galicia. And I think that strip really is attracting
the
me.
The Saunas Valley as well. I think Zarate.
Zarate,
yes. Is there. And also there's a really great guy called Alberto Nancares.
I don't know him.
Not imported into Germany, I think. Very small. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you for the advice. Take it. So we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
No, but
what
I like about these people, I mean.
Was Cospes always skin contact? Always? Because I didn't know that. And then when I opened the bottle for the team. And we tasted it. I was like, "Oh, this has got a good color." And I was like, "Oh, I think it's got skin contact." And
it's not the typical Albarino where you think it's fresh and easy and that mineral salty. This one is with skin contact.
It smells like sunshine.
Yes, like Albarino on steroids.
But it's nice that it smells so strong, and then it's not so.
What I like about the smell is like the. Of course, you get that lemony, citrusy skin. Character because of the fermentation on the skins, but what I like about this is like there's a honey and a herbal taste. So this reminds me more of a tea than of a wine, first of all. That's to me, like a herbal tea from Northern Greek, which I enjoy very much when I go home at night. My wife always cooks me a tea. It's wonderful. I like this.
I mean, this would make what I smell would make a great perfume. I mean, I would wear it probably. It's like a little honey, a little fruit. It's juicy, but it's still got some.
Call it Gwen's dreams. Well, that's gonna be.
There's not a Gewürztraminer on the table. I'm not even joking.
I think I'm the only person on the planet that still loves Gewürztraminer.
So many times we've had Gewürztraminer together, and she brings it. She's like, "But it's cool, right?" And I'm like, "You like it? That's the main thing." And she's
I love all the stuff that's not cool.
But Gewürztraminer is certainly not made for purists. It's made for hedonists.
Yeah, Gewürztraminer, it's good.
I think.
It smells delicious. It gets me.
Yeah, but yeah.
You know, but I also came into
can
wine.
Get tired.
I also came into wine from more of a perfume sort of thing. So like the smell of wine was probably what attracted me more to even learning about it than anything else, because I'm a perfume fanatic and own a lot of perfumes. So for me, the scent was always the most exciting.
No, you don't need to self-excuse here. That's
cool.
Yeah,
but that's the truth. Yeah, that's why I love the aromatics.
No, but it's
really
I think
you
it's...
You have to do a Gewürztraminer top shirt.
But what I like about your attitude is, Gwen, that you you deal with your devils.
Yeah.
No, a lot of people don't. People are not honest with themselves when it comes to wine. They go for other things. And I think that's cool to say, I like a Gewürztraminer. And
sometimes I have to drink it alone because no one else wants it with me.
Yeah.
And it's really tough because I finished the whole bottle really quickly.
Yeah. it's like the peach schnapps of wine. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, she likes peach schnapps as well.
Come on.
Peach schnapps?
Yeah, what's that? I mean, I like peach that you like on it. She's buying it.
It's a schnapps that I really like. Come on. I like the southern French also, you know, a little
cute. Viognier. Do you like Viognier as well?
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, yeah. She's
like
Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, of course.
Sauvignon Blanc girl too. Fantastic.
I mean, I like them all, but not that fussy.
That sounds like Erich Mielke.
Yeah.
You know, Erich Mielke was in the DDR, big guy, and one of his last speeches was in front of the blah blah blah. What I don't know how they call it in the Volkskammer. Volkskammer.
Okay.
Ah, ich liebe alle Menschen. And he was one of the toughest guys. made a lot of bad things.
Be careful.
Liebe doch alle Menschen. And people, whoa.
Gewürztraminer for everybody.
Yeah. Yes! And Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah. But also
let's float!
But true, Sauvignon was also probably one of the things I drank the most in the beginning, and now it's probably something I don't ever really drink so much of. Because now
there's room, there's space, there will be developments. There is hope.
Yeah, yeah. There's hope for all of us. Then I dated an Austrian, and then I drank shitloads of Grüner Veltliner.
Yeah, but I think that's another thing like a lot of people don't realize. When you want to learn something about wine, you need to drink it.
Yeah, totally.
You really need to drink it, and you sometimes, of course, with a hangover. But I think that's That's something a lot of people think, I'd like to know about wine. I've read everything from the books. Oh, great. So how does it taste? I mean, in the end, we're tasting something. Yeah. It's a beverage where you expose your palate, and that gives you that kind of richness too. A lot of people are very one-dimensional when it comes to taste, not only wine.
Oh, and everything.
And everything. Yeah. This is a little bit cold.
I don't do this.
Yeah.
Yes, I will only have the fillet. Don't give me the shoulders.
But I think that also comes from a moment of like what people think about themselves.
That?
Germans. Germans. Our chef once, when I was in the kitchen, he said, "Fuck them all." Yeah. I hate my clients. We put on some shoulder, lamb shoulder, lamb, also sweetbreads and things like this. Nobody wanted to eat it. And for the Germans, the animal can only have fillet and a saddle, maybe a leg, and that's it.
Maybe one leg.
So they have never heard from nose to tail eating. I mean, where we should, I mean, well, now we're in a different subject, but with food it's the same. Like, we are using only the best parts, what we think is the best parts, and that we are neglecting the really great things. It's the same with wine. We are thinking of the great wines, and some of the great wines are maybe not the biggest labels. Yeah. Like these three. I think these three are a good example.
Yeah, these are delicious.
Yeah. Each one. Character gives you more fun, and you're drinking with the right people.
Yeah.
This forget about the money.
I really love it. The depth of the wine,
I really love it.
What would you, Emily, what would you eat with this, recommend here at Michelberger? Well, you have a quite eclectic food here, which I really like, and a very talented chef.
Most people are eating at least two or three different things in one go as well, so I'm actively not really pairing wine. And when we do wine training, the most important thing is the guys know the wines.
The most
and
stuff.
We push wines that might suit people and... but we don't necessarily ever really do food pairing. We discuss it a little bit, but it's always... I'm not fully always convinced by food pairing. I think it works.
Can be not.
It can work. 5% of the times I've had food and wine pairing, I've actually thought, this is amazing. So we tend to champion delicious food and delicious wine and enjoying those two things, as not necessarily want. Pairing together, which I know that's completely avoided your question totally. I think with this particular wine, because of the skin contact, it could tolerate much stronger flavours than what you would usually match Albarino with. If I was matching Albarino, I'd look for quite clean fish dishes or fried fish dishes.
Exactly.
Deep-fried oysters.
Yeah, but here we are in a very good way to pair food and wine.
Yeah.
Think more of general things, not to become, the chef put 75 sauces on the table and 65 spices.
Yeah.
You're right. I think this will go with more complex dishes, and you can probably drink it through a menu and still have fun with each dish.
Yeah,
sometimes a little bit better, sometimes less, but probably it will be good in... Versatile, I think, is the British or the English word.
Yeah, it is really versatile.
I think for this wine, the way it's made draws you a little bit away from the variety, as it's quite unusual, from the place, and I think this is how it's meant. To be a little bit more innovative. I mean, once you know it's Albarino, it's from
them. And salinity in the wine as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that salinity also makes it Moorish, though. You want to have more because you're a little bit.
So this has more in the tattooers lingo. This would be
salty.
No, this has more color. This is a more complex.
Definitely super
tattoo.
Interesting. Yeah.
More color.
I really love it.
All right.
I think.
Food and wine has grown side by side. We forgot this in a world of where we can have everything everywhere at any price. That's, I think, it's got sad to see that tradition is getting lost, but it's good to see some people keeping it. Like, that's, I think, why Georgia has such a revival, too.
Yeah.
I need to go now, ladies.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I hope everybody enjoyed. And I just want to say, from my side, last couple of words, don't be hesitant, be passionate, follow your heart, don't think always about the money. It'll come when you're really good at what you do and love what you do anytime. That was my two words. What are your words?
Drink some more Gewürztraminer so I can be able to share a bottle with.
And my final words, and someone make friends with Gwen that likes Gewürztraminer so I don't have to keep drinking it with her.
That's good. She's like a bodyguard.
I'm only kidding. If I have to drink the Gewürztraminer with anyone, it'll be with you, Gwen. Thank you,
Hendrik. Now I import wines from around 50 small little labels from all over the world. And a lot of fun.
So I think this job, first of all, is giving people a great experience, and you can learn and add knowledge to the time you work really in that job. Because I see many people who don't really work in that job. They are maybe great tech. Well, they know a lot about wine, but they don't know a lot of people. Don't know a lot about people.
Don't know a lot about people.
Thank you. I still have a hangover from last night. Sorry.
Not a problem.
Okay.
So then you need the two things in combination.
I think. Yeah.
And I mean, how do you see it here in Germany in terms of the wine scene? Younger sommeliers, do you see that there are a lot of people interested in working in wine? Have you observed anything different from when you were on the floor to now? Mm.
I think a lot of people are interested into wine. They want to go into that direction. But I think a lot of people don't have the balls to really to execute and to go through and to become professional. And that means that's not always very, convenient to become a professional, because that means like you need to carve your niche, and it's effort, and a lot of people think they can go the easy way. I mean, that's first of all, that's the bottom line, because when I wanted to become a sommelier, nobody wanted to give me a chance, so I recarved my niche. I think now a lot of people are looking for sommeliers, and then we have people talking and doing not the job, and the job is make people happy. Mm. That means the floor.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't do it from home.
No.
Yeah. It's a profession. Yeah. It's a profession which is really about people, first of all. Full stop. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that.
And something else that's been an interesting topic for me anyway in the last few months is, what is a sommelier worth in terms of, you know, I think there's a huge disparity between what certain sommeliers get paid to others.
Mm.
About the service industry in general, even being a waiter, restaurant manager, it's a lot of time, isn't it? Like, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, and we were talking about like the amount of investment you have to have in yourself, also, you know, not just in the job itself, but outside of the job, studying and constantly keeping yourself up to date.
You need to be really hooked by that virus. Yes. And don't need to think about what you always make from it.
Yeah.
I think when you think about, oh, what can I make from certain things, then you are missing the creative part of that job. And I think it's, first of all, it's passion. And that creativity will basically, and that kind of extra efforts when you train and taste and travel and pay here, pay there, you think always, oh, what do I get for it? I mean, you find out later, much later in your career. So I think a lot of sommeliers are maybe not paid correctly in this country. Maybe they should get more. On the other hand, we have really difficult laws in terms for the employer. I can see that because I have a small company as well.
Mm.
So I think, let's say, United States, much easier, as they're participating in the sales. Mm. And then they get their share there. And if they're really good at what they do, they get, of course, a good wage. So I think sommeliers in the United States make much more money than here. But when I looked at my, let's say when I became an MS, I didn't look at how much I could make from it. I would like to see how much can I learn from it.
Yeah.
And then later on, I was lucky enough, circumstance, life helped me to make a decent living from that.
Yeah. Mm.
So
That's interesting, isn't it? And it's not necessarily, I don't think everybody is always thinking about that, but I do find sometimes, because it is so punishing in some ways, like the hours and how much of your life have you given.
But I do think that also translates to other jobs too, especially in creative jobs. Like you were saying, actually, that's the really interesting thing about money is not a good incentive when it comes to creative jobs. Mm. It has to be, the end result has to be the goal rather than money. Because the minute money becomes the end goal, you're incapable of doing your job because you're too focused. You can make someone do mechanical work with the dangling of the carrot, but you have to love it if it's going to be creative, otherwise you're completely blocked. And I see the same in my career. The more popular, the better I am, the more work I have to put in to get there and sustain that.
Mm.
But it means that in the end, my hourly, what I get paid hourly, does go down because you're having to put all this extra work in.
And it really comes from the network too. Once you have a network, that will pay back at one point. That's what I can see now. I mean, I'm now 25 years in this business, and I still know a lot of people, and that helps a little bit, just to get into, you know. So when I'm polishing, how to say it, that one?
Like cutlery, glassware?
No, polishing. In Germany, there's an expression when you are basically a salesman, you need to polish the...
I mean, I wish we could all see
the
your
door handles. Right, the
now.
Door handles. That's what we do. Jesus Christ. Wow.
We haven't even
can we cut it out, please?
Which actually, we My probably goodness. Should get into some wine right now.
Yes, which one? Which one you want? We have wine on the table, we're not drinking it.
I know.
I think we should start with...
Shame on us.
Should we start with the rosé?
We could. It's quite strong in that taste, so I'd
you know
rather go...
Wines. This or the Cortez...
Three great wines here. I mean, we have a Abatucci, which you brought along.
Yep.
Ooh,
Steam.
That's from Corse.
Yes.
So with some really crazy varieties. You need to look them up on Wikipedia. Actually, I've never been to that winery, and I've tasted some wines. That's really nice. Then we have a wine from which I import. Yes, Cospes from Albarino. That's Vinos Atlanticos from Rodri Mendes, and we have another Atlantic wine, but much further south, from the Canary Islands. It's a rosé, and I think we should do that rosé from Matias Itoris. But we can do it now. Why
okay.
not? Well,
okay.
see what comes out. So, La Palma. Beautiful capsule, I think.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit warm. Could be a little chill, but I noticed with her wines, they can use, or they... can stand up to temperature quite good. Guess they're quite stable. This has only 13%. You've been to La Palma?
No.
Well, you should take a trip. It's really nice. A lot of people go for the party islands on the Canary Islands. You know, Fuerteventura. La Palma is much more for elderly people, like
Perfect.
Me.
More my channel.
This is the most western of those islands. And which is interesting, like, because the climate on those islands, though they are, I think, in total surface like 300 kilometers from each other. This one is the most western end. You have a climate which is more humid, climate like South America.
Okay.
And the soils are volcanic. They have two different soil types. One is the younger ones, which because they had a volcano explosion in the 70s. And the northern part is much older soils, and you have a more red clay. And Matias Itoris, what I like about this like, I try to take trips. My wife, she likes Lanzarote, and we have a week in springtime, and we have a favorite restaurant, and they had this wine a couple of years ago, and they served it to us, and we said, like, this is much different than all the other beautiful vacation wines. Mm. What is it? And then we looked it up. Matias Itoris, the guy got it at some wine shop, and then 2 years later we would find out that she would only sell about 120 bottles on the Canary Islands, and the rest would ship to London, New York, Stockholm, Berlin. Wherever, as people don't appreciate it, because a lot of people think these wines are
weird.
Kind of weird, or that vacation wines are normally comfort zone wines. So in this winery, what I like, they work with ungrafted Prephylloxera rootstock. So
which is quite common in the Canaries, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is, but it's quite rare in the world of wine. And she works with her family since 1885 on that winery. That means like fifth generation, they produce only between 15,000 to 20,000 bottles, depending on the year. And I think she didn't want to become the winemaker. Her father died. He was a very humble man and a known winemaker. And she had to take the position as her brother had other things in mind and someone wanted to keep it. They wanted to keep it in the family. And I think Victoria has done such a great job. So this is a rosé for not rosé drinkers. Would you agree, Emily?
I would agree. I actually find it more for, if you like, Jura Reds, maybe the more inclined, because
the spiciness,
the fruit, and also the savouriness of the wine as well.
Yeah. This is really, I love this. I love her wines. She's so skillful.
This is called 838740.
Exactly.
Claret.
What I don't know what the numbers are for. The claret, of course, means to the Bordeaux style of a heavier rosé. And this wine is produced from three varieties. And I think the formula she uses, that's quite unique. I mean, I wish in Germany sometimes we would have more young people trying to play and, you know, work around a little bit with what's possible. So she takes the Negramol, the red variety. She soaks it for 4 days and to get a little bit of color, extract color. Then she blends that must with Listan. Listan de Canarias, which is Palomino, mm-hmm. so which is quite neutral.
But she's using Listan Blanco.
Listan Blanco.
Because it's red.
And then, exactly, that's Listan Prieto. Yep. Well, anyway, difficult Spanish thing. But so right. she blends the white and the red must, and then let it start co-ferment together. Mm-hmm. And she says it's like a tradition they have had on the island. And then, in the end, she would add about 10% of Albillo Criollo, which she fermented extra, and on the skins.
Okay.
And that's, I think that's where the tartness comes from in this wine.
Interesting, yeah.
And I like the formula. I mean, think of like, yeah. hey, that's like chemistry or alchemistry or something next. But what comes out is nice. But you're right. I mean, Jura would be, a lot of people don't know how Jura tastes. So, but I think it has this, don't want to use it again, but umami kind of.
Yeah, totally.
For sure.
Beautiful. It can, I think, match with many good food. Interesting foods too. Mm. And what I like about this, it's good acidity, so it's not cloying, it's really dry. It's not like these one of these these Wanker rosés. Oh, excuse my French. These Babla rosés.
French is slipping out.
Yeah.
but it has this this really consequent and this is not an ego wine, I think. It's made with all the possibilities, but it's meant to be with food, and it really shows and displays where it's from. And I think this is what wine should be.
Yeah.
Wine should be something, if I drink alcohol, then I want to be inspired. And I think many people just drink wine because they think, oh, it's a mellow, oh, it's nice, oh, it's expensive, or whatsoever, oh, nice label. But I think in the end, you drink the liquid and you want to get some inspiration. And I get inspiration from this. Don't know how she does it, but I think it's just because she stays genuine and she stays humble.
Yeah.
And then she's not aiming for...
This field blend, like what's really worked, I know it's not a field blend, but this sort of blend of varietals and styles, it's quite
co-ferment.
Common. It's co-ferment, yeah, but you see this quite a bit in Australia, actually, with some of the more low-intervention winemakers. It's quite common to have these sort of pink-coloured wines.
I think it's
that are somewhere
smart,
between
eh?
White, red and an orange, because they're just saying, oh, I've had a bit of this, and I think that works really well with their, like, but very typically, like Pinot Gris on skins is quite common to see that.
Mm.
It looks like a Pinot Noir, yeah, because obviously the extraction from the skins of the top is pink hue to them. But they're really interesting wines to give to people because you taste them and you're like,
what is this?
I think in the new world in Europe, a lot of people have not understood that the new world has much more to offer. I mean, especially in Germany, it's really poor. If I look at what is offered from the new world, and then I go to places like London, even Copenhagen, and you see much more of a variety. And I think this is what Germany also should be. We should also import the good stuff and the interesting stuff, because that's also gives us inspiration. So, but
I mean, you're working with quite a few producers from South Africa. Well, you have a couple from South Africa.
Four of them, yeah. yes. It's enough. Four of those blokes.
And a few from
But I think we talked about this with Holger when we went to Viniculture. Was this idea that when places have a long wine history, that when people have a long wine history, they tend to go for wines from their own country.
Yeah, I mean, the same. It's probably the same in France, the same in Spain.
Exactly.
But hey, you go to Spain, you go to Barcelona, or you can see some really exciting wine lists, I think. Yeah, of course, sure, there's a kind of a protectional thing. And
that's why Scandinavians are a little more open-minded, because they don't produce
Canadians,
their own.
Canadians,
yeah, totally,
too.
Also. Oh.
Canada has made a great way in terms of wine, I think.
No, I really, except a lot of it doesn't come out of Canada, because it's too small.
Yeah, we import one wine from Canada, and Per Morissette.
Yeah.
I'm so happy with that. I mean, it's a wine you can really surprise people.
Yeah, that Cabernet Franc is very good.
Yeah, I think it's special. So now we have a wine. Emily, I'm looking.
So thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay, how are these varieties first? can you just look them up in the internet?
So the wine that we have, we have from Abatucci, the Faustine Red, but the old vine, so the Viognier 2015. Mm. So Corsica, the island of France, and it's quite interesting because obviously it falls under France, doesn't it? But I always find the wines from Corsica to be more similar to Italian wines, actually. I find this more like an Italian red than a French red, because it has this bittersweet, the tannin acid structure is slightly different. for me personally. So the great varieties are almost impossible to remember or pronounce.
Should we try again?
I feel like it's
Yeah.
I was just saying, I feel like it's either a line from Queen's Scaramouche.
Nieluccio and Schiacciarello. I mean, the best thing is always when you do wine description, you say, well, some indigenous varieties.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So people can look it up by themselves. Yeah.
Google it yourself.
Tongue breaker. No, but local grapes is good too. I've had some of his rosés. I like it. I think he works in the biodynamics. He's by Demeter, yes?
Yes. And granite soils.
I think this is well chosen in terms of the wine we've had before. I think I can see a similar outcome. This more elegant, more fine, more subdued, not the dark berry fruit. It's the light red fruit. Yeah. It's the spiciness. I mean, it's quite hot today.
Yeah, so it's nice. It's got this. Yeah,
it warms up quick. But so I'd like to drink it a little chilled, more chilled than this one even.
Yeah, I mean, I pulled that out of the fridge. It was 16 degrees in the fridge, but obviously it's been on the table for a while. Oh, so okay.
This will be nice with some goat, I think, or lamb. Strong flavors. What I like about these wines, and I think Europe at the moment is a great place. 20 years ago, when I was a sommelier, That wasn't on the list for no one. We were still thinking of Burgundy, Bordeaux, a little bit of New World, but not too much. And then, and then Germany, of course. And now we have this fantastic variety, this regional wines. And in those days, they were, let's say, now we have these autochthone varieties. Now we have this Demeter wines and things like this. It was still kind of under suspicion if that's gonna be ever great. And now 20 years later, this I think is great. The results are obviously much better than what we have in international wines, because we have too many international wines which are basically all taste in the same direction, because they're made basically from the same mindset. And I think the greatest thing you have in wine is the place where you can grow and where you can create something unique and not only a formula.
The formulaic thing I think is really interesting, because you also see it chatting with chefs about this, also this idea of formula, that instead of when you're cooking a dish thinking of adding, it needs sugar, that much salt, it should be like, what is a salty ingredient that I can add instead of actually salt? What's sweet that we can add? Things get more interesting that way when you don't work with a cookie cutter formula of X, Y, Z, this works.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think with any kind of thing, like also the human aspect should not be forgotten. That means like you need to have experience, and this is like something great value to a wine. It's not like something you've learned from school. This is like something you've learned in your family, and I think they have understood this, that that was a great value, but it took a little bit to see. Wow, we can maybe play on a different level. And I think now they do this. I mean, many of the wines at the beginning were quite bizarre, faulty, or stinky, or whatsoever. And I have to say, this wine is so fantastic. It's really pure. It's clean. Not clean in that kind of thing, like it's cleanly made.
It's
but
sterile,
there's no, there's nothing wrong with this wine. Really there's no nothing. Mistakes, exactly. Yeah, no stare, exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think, younger people will be attracted by this wine?
Look, I don't like...
I'm the oldest here at the table, I can ask you.
Yeah, so... So, I mean, this is on the list at the Mickelberger, and we don't sell large volumes of it at all, because it still is a hand sell. Also, it's not... These particular wines don't come in super cheap.
No, this has a price, yes, of course, yes. Not. What's the price on the list?
The list price is around $65.
Yeah, but...
It's not crazy in the world
it's
of,
a nice
in the world of wine, but...
Yeah. Let's say for the... Average person thinks 65 is a lot of money.
Yeah,
I have to say, a lot of people have to work very hard for their money. 65 will be. But when I look sometimes, wines which are consumed for 200 or 300, they're not as inspiring as this one.
Yeah.
So this, I think, in the end, is the much better deal. But those people who make a lot, of course, they are much more attracted by the big names, and they don't want to make mistakes, or they want to impress the ladies, or the ladies want to impress the guys, and see, my dear, I have brought this wonderful Aia wine from Italy, and oh dear, I'm worth now for that day 300. Okay, let's do it. You know, this is how it works in many ways. And this is different. Yeah. He really needs to love wine.
But I think that's the thing that's interesting about sort of the push also with natural wines is you end up with less of this brand name idea. Mm. And people are a bit more curious about finding something special instead of having the, I have a Louis Vuitton handbag. I have a brand name wine.
Or I go to a designer who makes something special.
They would rather
something.
Be like, look at this cool designer I have from, look at this cool wine I know about. I mean, that's the nice thing about the shift towards...
Is it in the tattoo scene? Must be the same. There must be some big names and, let me do
A tattoo. They're not always great, but they have a
name. I've got it from that guy.
Exactly. It's the same idea. It's a luxury product with a brand.
I got this tattoo on my cheeks in London from... That was really ugly. And then this guy, you know what was so funny? He had a tattoo, and I was asking, what is this? It was a French guy. And I asked him, what is this? He had all these big black,
Like stripes.
Stripes, like a zebra.
Yeah.
And I asked him, what is this? And he said, well, I have this on the girlfriend's names I've had.
Yeah.
And they basically got to erase them with the big stripe. So he had a full arm.
I mean, how many stripes does that take until you realize this maybe isn't a good idea?
Well, he had 8.
At least. Romantic,
and then he had one, I'll never forget, he had one here on his neck, Jennifer. And I thought, like, wow, now he's getting, this is becoming serious.
Like, straight for the neck.
If it doesn't work out.
Luckily, there's a lot of Jennifers in the world.
Can you imagine after that, you're like, God, I can't get this one removed. I could only date Jennifers from now on.
Yeah, must find another Jennifer. Yeah.
No, but I think in many ways, if you look at wine, if you look at food, if you look at artists, if you look at tattoos, books, there is a lot of similarities in how it's treated by us. And I think most of it has to do with respect or with a kind of awareness what you do. I mean, I got tattoos when I was younger. But look at them now. I say, like, okay, that I feel comfortable with them. For many years, I didn't feel comfortable. When I had them, I was cool.
Yeah.
Then I didn't felt in decline.
Cool.
Now I'm cool with it. Now I'm with in my age group, I'm probably one of the few ones who's.
You're like, check this out.
Yes, I can compete with the hipster guys. But what I'm saying is, like, I look now at people when they do tattoos and they do it in a more. It's interesting. Like, it's almost like when I look at you, Gwen. Also, you use it as a piece. It's very natural. It belongs to you, though. It's quite.
I mean, I also have a struggle with this, you know, you go through a period of wanting to be different, and then you sometimes pendulums swing the other way, then you want to be a bit more accepted, and then you find the happy balance where you accept both parts of yourself. So I think, but respect, I think that's a really interesting, but that also goes back to the wine education idea, goes back to all of these things tie in, because it's this idea of knowing what came before you. You were saying about winemakers, that it's not just about knowing what you know now, it's taking the combined knowledge of your ancestors and bringing it to a moment. All of these things, tattooing, wine.
A lot of people go with their tattoos, it's very interesting, from very... horrible later on they realize.
I mean, come on, let's talk about, we've talked about this in episode 1, the wines I drank from the beginning. You do the same, and you start with
something,
your training wheels, and then you
easy stuff
learn
normally.
A bit,
though. So I had good, like, I mean, in Germany there is this kind of very modest thing always, like, people tell you, you need to first start with the cheap stuff and with the easy stuff.
You don't deserve the expensive
stuff yet. And I can tell all the young people, inspiration comes from great things, and normally not from these wines.
Yeah.
From these wines, it comes beautiful, beautiful
hangovers.
But inspiration comes from really great stuff. And even though if you have no fucking clue about it, once you have a great wine, you might, there's a good chance you get hooked to it.
I mean, with anything, when you treat yourself, when you say, I deserve something nice, and even if that means saving up a little bit and waiting to have something lovely rather than having lots of terrible wine, you feel really good.
Why go through all that? But I think that's maybe Calvinistic thing, like when they tell us to, if you go to paradise, to go to paradise, you have to eat through this big, big wall of pudding. Emily's a little bit quiet now. She's thinking.
I'm listening to
are you thinking of getting a tattoo? We can gummy and...
Okay, good. But what we've got in front of us right now, I could definitely smash the whole...
Evening? Day?
I could smash this right now.
Wow.
Easy.
Be careful.
It smells it's, good.
It's quite strong. It's
delicious.
It's a wine, Cospes is a wine from Rodri Mendes. Mm. And he's quite famous now in Spain. I mean, in Germany, I don't think so. But in the scene of wine, I think a lot of people know him. And he's, I think, in the regard, he's a kind of a visionary too. He's in Cambados, which is a place in the area of Rías Baixas. So Val de Salnés, that's basically on the western coast of Europe, basically north of Portugal. Rías Baixas is Galicia. And I think that strip really is attracting
me. The Saunas Valley as well. I think Zarate.
Zarate,
yes. Is there. And also there's a really great guy called Alberto Nancares.
I don't know him.
Not imported into Germany, no. I think. Very small. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you for the advice. Thank you. So we'll take a look at it. Yeah. No, but what I like about these people, I mean.
Was Cospes always skin contact? Always, because I didn't know that. And then when I opened the bottle for the team. And we tasted it. I was like, oh, this has got a good colour. And I was like, oh, I think it's got skin contact. And
It's not the typical Albarino, yeah. Where you think it's fresh and easy and that mineral salty. This one is with skin contact.
It smells like sunshine.
Yes, like Albarino on steroids.
But it's nice that it smells so strong and then it's not so...
What I like about the smell is like, of course you get that lemony, citrusy skin character because of the fermentation on the skins. But what I like about this is like there's a honey and a herbal taste. So this reminds me more of a tea than of a wine, first of all. To me, like a herbal tea from Northern Greek, which I enjoy very much when I go home at night. My wife always cooks me a tea. It's wonderful. I like this.
I mean, this would make, what I smell would make a great perfume. I mean, I would wear it probably. It's like a little honey, a little fruit. It's juicy, but it's still got some...
Call it Gwen's dreams. Well, that's going to be
there's not a Gewürztraminer on the table. She's mad for it. I'm not even joking.
I think I'm the only person on the planet that still loves Gewürztraminer.
She knows. So many times we've had Gewürztraminer together and she brings it. She's like, but it's cool, right? And I'm like, you like it. That's the main thing. She's
I love all the stuff that's not cool.
Well, Gewürztraminer is certainly not made for purists. It's made for hedonists.
Yeah, so. Gewürztraminer, it's good.
I think...
It smells delicious, it gets me...
Yeah.
You know, but I also came into
wine...
Also came into wine from more of a perfume sort of thing. So, the smell of wine was probably what attracted me more to even learning about it than anything else, because I'm a perfume fanatic and own a lot of perfumes. So, for me, the scent was always the most exciting
thing. No, you don't need to self-excuse here. That's cool.
Yeah, but that's the truth, yeah. That's why I love the aromatics.
No, but I think it's...
You have to do a Gewürztraminer top shirt.
But what I like about your attitude is, Gwen, that you deal with your devils. No, a lot of people don't. People are not honest with themselves when it comes to wine. They go for other things. And I think that's cool to say, I like a Gewürztraminer. And
sometimes I have to drink it alone because no one else wants it with me.
Yeah. And it's really tough because I finish the whole bottle really quickly.
Yeah. it's like the peach schnapps of wine, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, she likes peach schnapps as well.
Come on.
Peach schnapps?
Yeah, what's that? I mean, I like the fish that you like on it. She's buying it.
It's a schnapps that I really like. It's come on. I like the Southern French also, you know, a little...
Do you like Viognier as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
Viognier. Yeah, she's Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, of course.
Sauvignon Blanc girl too.
Fantastic. I mean, I like them all, but not that fussy.
That sounds like Erich Mielke.
Yeah.
You know, Erich Mielke was in the DDR, big guy, and one of his last speeches was in front of the blah blah blah. What I don't know how they call it in the Volkskammer.
Okay.
Ah, ich liebe alle Menschen, and he was one of the toughest guys.
made a lot of bad things. Be careful.
Liebe doch alle Menschen, and people.
Gewürztraminer for everybody.
Yeah. Yes, and Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah. But also
let's float.
But true, Sauvignon was also probably one of the things I drank the most in the beginning, and now it's probably something I don't ever really drink so much of because now
there's room, there's space. Yeah. There will be developments. There is hope.
Yeah, there's hope for all of us. Then I dated an Austrian, and then I drank shitloads of Grüner Veltliner.
Yeah, but I think that's another thing. Like a lot of people don't realize, when you want to learn something about wine, you need to drink it.
Yeah, totally.
You really need to drink it, and you sometimes, of course, with a hangover. But I think that's yeah. something. A lot of people think, I'd like to know about wine. I've read everything from the books. Oh, great. So how does it taste? I mean, in the end, we're tasting something. Yeah. It's a it's a beverage where you expose your palate, and that gives you that kind of richness too. A lot of people are very one-dimensional when it comes to taste, not only wine.
Oh, and everything.
And everything. Like, you know, oh, this is a little bit
cold. I don't do this.
Yeah. Yes, I will only have the fillet. Don't give me the shoulders.
But I think that also comes from a moment of, like, what people think about themselves.
Germans. Germans. Our chef once, when I was in the kitchen, he said, fuck them all. I hate my clients. We put on some shoulder, lamb shoulder, lamb, also sweetbreads and things like this. Nobody wanted to eat it. And for the Germans, the animal can only have fillet and a saddle, maybe a leg, and that's it.
Maybe one leg.
So they have never heard from nose to tail. Eating. I mean, where we should, I mean, well, now we're in a different subject, but with food it's the same. Like, we are using only the best parts, what we think is the best parts, and we are neglecting the really great things. It's the same with wine. We are thinking of the great wines, and some of the great wines are maybe not the biggest labels. Yeah. Like these three. I think these three are a good example.
Yeah, these are really all delicious.
Each one. Character gives you more fun, and you're drinking with the right people. Yeah. Forget about the money.
I really love it.
The depth of the wine,
I really love it.
What would you, Emily, what would you eat with this, recommend here at Michelberger? Well, you have a quite eclectic food here, which I really like, and a very talented chef.
Most people are eating at least two or three different things in one go as well, so I'm actively not really pairing wine. When we do wine training, the most important thing is the guys know the wines,
and we
push wines that might suit people, and... but we don't necessarily ever really do food pairing. We discuss it a little bit, but it's always... I'm not fully always convinced by food pairing. I think it works.
Can be not.
It can work. 5% of the times I've had food and wine pairing, I've actually thought, this is amazing. So we tend to champion delicious food and delicious wine and enjoying those two things, not necessarily pairing together, which I know that's completely avoided your question totally. I think with this particular wine, because of the skin contact, it could tolerate much stronger flavours than what you would usually match Albarino with. If I was matching Albarino, I'd look for quite clean fish dishes or fried fish dishes.
Exactly.
Deep fried oysters.
Yeah, but here we are in a very good way to pair food and wine.
Yeah.
Think more of general things, not to become, the chef put 75 sauces on the table and 65 spices.
Yes.
You're right. I think this will go with more complex dishes, and you can probably drink it through a menu and still have fun with each dish.
Yeah,
sometimes a little bit better, sometimes less, but probably it will be good in... Versatile, I think, is the British or the English word.
Yeah, it is really versatile.
I think for this wine, the way it's made draws you a little bit away from the variety, as it's quite unusual, from the place, and I think this is how it's meant. To be a little bit more innovative. I mean, once you know it's Albarino, you know it's from them.
And salinity in the wine as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that salinity also makes it Moorish, though. You want to have more because you're a little bit.
So this has more in the tattooers' lingo. This would be this,
salty.
No, this has more color. This is a more complex.
Definitely super
tattoo.
Interesting. Yeah.
More color.
I really love it.
All right.
I think.
Food and wine has grown side by side. We forgot this in a world of where we can have everything everywhere at any price. It's quite sad to see that tradition is getting lost, but it's good to see some people keeping it. Like, that's, I think, why Georgia has such a revival too.
Yeah.
I need to go now, ladies.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I hope everybody enjoyed. And I just want to say from my side, last couple of words, don't be hesitant, be passionate, follow your heart, don't think always about the money. It'll come when you're really good at what you do and love what you do anytime. That was my two words. What are your words?
Drink some more Gewürztraminer so I have people to share a bottle with.
And my final words, and someone make friends with Gwen that likes Gewürztraminer so I don't have to keep drinking it with her.
That's good. She's like a bodyguard.
No, I'm only kidding. If I have to drink the first swim of anyone, it'll be with you, Gwen. So,
thank you,
Hendrik. Thank you.